broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network. This is Cultural Baggage.
Not only inhumane, it is really fundamentally un-American.
My name is Dean Becker. Steve Nolan is our engineer. We invite you to join us as we examine the unvarnished truth about the drug war. Welcome to Cultural Baggage. Our guest for the evening is Howard Wooldridge, a member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, LEAP.cc. But first, the news. Earlier today, I spoke with Bill Piper of the Drug Policy Alliance, DPA.org, and I asked him about an ad I saw which suggested that we save our jails for real criminals and stop arresting marijuana users. Here's what he had to say.
Well, it's significant for two reasons. One, we're running it in D.C. In subway stops that members of Congress and congressional staffers visit. So they'll be getting a very clear message that marijuana prohibition does more harm than good. But it's also significant because it's a result of a lawsuit that the Drug Policy Alliance and ACLU and other groups launched earlier this year in response to a federal law that was passed that essentially prohibited drug policy reform groups from advertising on buses and subways around the country. And so we sued, and a few months ago a federal judge ruled that that federal provision was unconstitutional, that it violated the First Amendment, and that we had the right to run, you know, advertising just to raise awareness about the, you know, the cost, both in human cost and fiscal costs, of locking up nonviolent marijuana smokers.
It should be quite a surprise for the U.S. Republican Guard when they return to D.C. from their shenanigans in New York. Drug czar of the Americas, John Walters, tours North America stating that marijuana has become so potent it's more dangerous than heroin, cocaine, and methamphetamine. But late last week, the U.S. Justice Department brought forth evidence that shows that's just a lie. From MarijuanaNews.com out of British Columbia, this is Richard Cowan.
If the American media objected to the American people being lied to get into the domestic wars instead of foreign wars, then this report from the Justice Department would blow the drug czar out of the water. You know, the problem is not that Canada is suddenly, you know, this pro-pot place swamping the U.S. with potent bud. The problem is that there are people in power in both countries who do not believe in the fundamental principles that the two countries were founded on, is individual freedom.
Thanks to the policy support and involvement of the current U.S. administration, 7 million Afghanis are now free to grow opium poppies in support of the world's demand for heroin. Poppygate, bizarre news about the U.S. policy on controlling heroin, featuring Glenn Greenway.
This week's Poppygate update begins in Vermont, which leads the U.S. in the rate of prison population growth. The director of planning for the Vermont Department of Corrections cites cheap heroin for the state's prison population explosion, especially among women, and adds, "It's very easy to turn to, especially when it costs less than a beer." On to Great Britain, where a memo recently leaked from a British Cabinet Drugs Committee meeting said that any arrests of Afghan heroin producers would have to be, quote, handled sensitively. The British opposition responded that the current policy will result in more heroin use, rising crime rates, and increased funding for terrorism. On August 6th in Santa Marta, Colombia, U.S. drug czar John Walters admitted Plan Colombia is failing. 5 days later, en route to Kabul, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld touted Plan Colombia as a successful model for ending opium production in U.S.-occupied Afghanistan. This is Glenn Greenway reporting for the Drug Truth Network.
Let's face it, the threat to liberty that Americans often encounter comes from those who kick in your door in the middle of the night, those who take billions of dollars in material goods each year without a conviction, those who point guns at children, and who sometimes kill innocents by mistake, those who imprison more than 1 million nonviolent U.S. citizens each year for witchcraft. Law enforcement has used their linchpin status in preserving this drug war, and now they have become part of a conspiracy of silence and have become that which they were most obligated to destroy. To respond to that thought, we have with us today an 18-year veteran of law enforcement and a very active member of law enforcement against prohibition. Mr. Howard Wooldridge, welcome to Cultural Baggage.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Yes, sir. I wanted to ask you a question here about the Texas law you helped to promote as a lobbyist last year. Tell us about that law and how it impacts the citizens of Texas.
I was a small part of the team that passed House Bill 2668, which provides that for the first offense of personal amounts of any illegal drug, from marijuana to heroin, the citizens of Texas receive no jail time. It is straight into probation or probation treatment.
Now, Howard Wooldridge, tell us, what is the nature of your work, and what has compelled you to become a member of LEAP, to tour the U.S. and the world, in fact, speaking of the need to end prohibition?
Well, leaving police work after 18 years, there's a big hole, and the way to because when you're arresting drunk drivers, you're arresting child molesters, you know, you're making your community safer and better. And when you don't have that ability to do it, you want to do something important. And what I realized 7 years ago when Bob Ramsey got me into this was that I could be a person who could change law by advocating changing our drug laws, which would then make my community safer and better.
Okay, earlier today you spoke to the Houston City Council on behalf of Bayou City Compassion. Tell us of any response you received from the council or from members of the audience.
I had several members of the audience were very positive, wanted to get my business card and a brochure from LEAP. I spoke to several black ministers who were there. They were interested in the message of ending the drug war. Unfortunately, one of them said, no, that would be a terrible thing to end the drug war, which is always surprising since it's the black community which suffers more than any other minority in this war. Unfortunately, they keep thinking that it's the drugs that's the problem as opposed to the drug war.
Now, Howard, earlier this week I spoke to the director of LEAP, and he reminded me that your organization had been attending certain police conventions. Tell us a bit about that interaction.
Yeah, we received a nice grant earlier this year from another reform group to go to the unconverted, not only the unconverted, but the police unconverted. We are going to attend about 7 conferences this year of nothing but police officers. The first team that met in Seattle, the National Sheriff's Association, was 4,000 sheriffs and undersheriffs, command officers, and we tabled and lobbied hard, brethren, to admit what we all know, and that is that the war on drugs, drug prohibition, is getting more people hurt and killed than the drugs themselves, and we in law enforcement need to speak out because we know the issue better than anyone.
Now, Howard, you've studied the history of this drug war, and you've been in the trenches, as you were just speaking of.
Right.
You receive overwhelming support anywhere you talk for ending this failure of drug prohibition. And it brings to mind, these facts are so obvious, and in my opinion, glaring.
Mm-hmm.
What is the glue? What is it? I mean, it's not just the money, is it? Is there some other societal or subconscious mechanism at play?
Well, there are many factors keeping policy the same. I think, number one, of course, is the money from the drug companies, which fear marijuana as a competitive product, the alcohol industry, which also fears marijuana as a competitive product. But also, remember, Dean, the three hardest words in the English language are, I was wrong. Ego plays a huge part in keeping this the way it is because people are very reluctant to admit they were wrong on something. And the other part of it is, because the people have been receiving so much propaganda for the last 30 years that the world would absolutely fall apart, the sun would not come up if we change one drug law, that American soccer moms and dads have been scared into believing we can't change anything, otherwise my 15-year-old would just be somehow destroyed by these drugs.
You know, I mentioned that Howard tours the nation, giving talks to Rotaries, many other organizations within the community. And as I pulled up to the station, I caught a good look at his truck. And, you know, that would be hard for me to drive cross-country. But describe your truck and what interaction that probably leads to.
Well, I've got a Chevy half-ton pickup truck. In the back of the windshield, I cut out one of my old T-shirts that says, Cops Say Legalize Pot, Ask Me Why. And then on the tailgate, I got some magnetic signs that say, law enforcement against prohibition, and why? Focus on drunk drivers. Also got that focus on drunk drivers on the side of the truck. Basically a Shriner mobile, and the reaction across America has been absolutely wonderful. I've had so many welcome signs and people nodding their head and grinning and cheering and honking their horn, truck drivers blasting their air horns in support. Because I put on about 25,000 miles already this year on my Chevy truck. And from Oregon to Virginia, from Detroit down to Miami, across this nation, people have responded positively to the idea that law enforcement should concentrate on public safety issues and not worry about whether Willie Nelson or Whitney Houston or Rush Limbaugh is using a drug in the privacy of their own home.
A comment you made a second ago reminds me of something I read on you today, that when you were a law enforcement officer, you saw that many more people were killed by alcohol than all the other illicit drugs combined.
Right.
And was that part of your focus? What brought you to become a member of LEAP?
Well, the public safety threats out there, like the drunk driver, are going unaddressed or certainly not as focused as we would like to. I'm convinced that my colleagues could save thousands of lives every year needlessly killed by drunk drivers, because we are chasing Willie, we're chasing Whitney Houston and Rush Limbaugh and their suppliers, as opposed to going in after the obvious public safety threats of the drunk and reckless driver, the child molester, the people breaking into our home, the animals who rape our women and children, because we've lost focus on public safety. Instead, society has told us to go after personal safety issues about what you put in your mouth.
Now, we touched on this last time we talked, but when these cops have their ass up in the air and they're down there looking under the dashboard and under the seat, how many hours does that involve? Is that part of the average cop's lifestyle?
Well, unfortunately, yes, Dean, and I've done a small informal study of that. Road officers spend across the nation almost exactly as many hours looking under your front seat for marijuana as they do drunk drivers. And unfortunately, every hour we spend, and it's about 10 million, by the way, 10 million hours are spent by road officers looking for marijuana and 10 million hours spent enforcing drunk driving laws. And every hour we spend looking for that marijuana is an hour we miss that drunk driver. We're out of position. We're handling a marijuana arrest. And so when you see a drunk driver going down your street and you dial 911, they say, "I'm sorry, that officer's tied up in a marijuana arrest." And so the drunk driver, which is going to kill people, is now essentially second in importance to the person with a little baggy marijuana who is not intoxicated at the time.
It does seem a vast waste of our resources. Now, think of the money involved in paying for those hours as well. It's to the billions.
It's astronomical, the amount of money we spend doing that. And, of course, all of that detracts from our ability to effectively stop the 17,000 people killed on our nation's highways by drunk drivers.
We're going to take just a short break, and when we come back, I want to talk about your continental and soon-to-be transcontinental trip across America.
Okay.
It's time for the choir to leave the church house. Wake up Grandma and Uncle Bubba. Give them a copy of We've Been Duped, the CD from Cultural Baggage and the 420 Drug War News. Visit drugtruth.net.
It's time to play Name That Drug by Its Side Effects. Persistent diarrhea, stomach upset, nausea and vomiting, bloody urine, fever, unusual bleeding, yellow eyes or skin, unusual tiredness or weakness, pseudomembranous colitis, dizziness, trouble breathing, and congestive heart failure. Time's up. The answer, penicillin, another FDA-approved product.
Hey, man.
Mm.
Try some of this. It's absolutely dynamite.
Oh, yeah?
To learn the truth, please visit the Marijuana Policy Project, MPP.org.
Okay, I want to let you know you're listening to Cultural Baggage on the Drug Truth Network, and we have with us tonight Howard Wooldridge, a member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Before we went to break, I said, Howard, tell us about this soon-to-be transcontinental trip across the nation on your horse, Misty.
Well, Dean, as you know, last year Misty and I completed 3,100 miles from Georgia to Oregon. And through it all, the media came looking for us. We got on TV 14 times, about 45 times in print. And that gave me the idea that that this time, if we went from a different route, went by more big cities like L.A., Chicago, New York, we could really, really pull in a lot of new people to understand the situation with Prohibition, drug war. So I've decided that starting next March, I'm going to be leaving L.A. and be headed towards the Big Apple, 3,700 miles this time, going by seven state capitals to make publicity, to draw attention to this disastrous policy of the war on drugs, and to hopefully shorten by even a period of weeks or months the day when we end this policy and get back to a policy based on personal responsibility and liberty.
Now, as a traveling man, I know sometimes it's tough to keep up with news in a certain locale, but here in Houston, I think we're starting to hit the big time. Court TV had a big to-do about it last week, the Houston Crime Lab, and the scandal that's unfolding there. And I know you were there today as Cissy Farenthold gave a report to her. And I want to play just a little bit of that track for the audience on the network.
My name is Cissy Farenthold, and I'm here about the Crime Lab. And when we recited the Pledge of Allegiance today, that last phrase seemed particularly pertinent for liberty and justice for all. I was heartsick a few minutes ago when I learned there are 15 more DNA cases, so I'll leave that for further exploration and explanation.
Okay, that was Cissy Farenthold. She was a two-time state congresswoman here in Texas, and the scandal is unfolding. 280 boxes full of 8,000 cases with body parts and fetuses moldering in a warehouse when that evidence could have been presented, you know, to a grand jury, to a regular jury, to keep perhaps thousands of people out of prison. Howard, we heard from some of the city council members here that even they are beginning to say someone needs to face criminal penalties for this. Your thoughts, please.
Well, I just know that because the crime labs, I was a police officer in Michigan, and the crime labs are being overrun across the country with these nickel and dime drug cases, where if in some cases, in some states now, you have to test every one. You simply cannot assume that the drug is what they think it is because of things like the sheetrock scandal up in Dallas, where we thought it was cocaine, but it turned out to be sheetrock instead. 78 people went to prison, a huge problem for Dallas PD. So now in the state of Texas, you have to test every case. You can't assume any part of any drug is exactly what the officers think it was because of a field sobriety test. This backs up the entire system. It's basically like a toilet that's got too much in there and you can't flush it, and it just keeps building up and stinking and stinking. And the problem is, Dean, and for your real listeners, it's not the toilet, it's people who are being backed up into the system, and they are rotting in jail when they may or may not be guilty. This is not the America I want to live in.
Well said. You know, I think about the instance where now the district attorney has agreed there should be a full investigation, but he wants to appoint another prosecutor to that task, and that's just not right.
Yeah, the fox is guarding the hen house. Same thing up in Dallas with the sheetrock scandals. I understand that the district attorney up there nominated one of his friends to investigate this guy's office. So again, law enforcement is reluctant to air its dirty laundry. The wall of silence for the thin blue line and the rest of it is still there, unfortunately. And of course, who suffers? People who are innocent.
Well, in private, you can talk to the politicians, the policemen, the doctor, anyone with that stature, with a voice that might make a difference. And the working police officers just can't do it because they would lose their job.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't expect any police officers out there listening to me to all of a sudden jump up at the next briefing before the shift and say, you know, we need to legalize, regulate drugs and get rid of the black market, eliminate drug dealers, because it would be career suicide. On the other hand, if you're a retired police officer, retired prosecutor, you can do it safely like I do. For as much as I've got my truck with all those signs on it, my T-shirt talks about cops say legalize drugs, ask me why, I've never had a problem or a ticket from anybody, never been harassed by the cops across America, with a few exceptions with when I was with my horse.
They didn't like the horse. Huh? Well, okay. Now, Dr. Leo Sigueroa, he's head of the Texas Medical Association, and he just issued a report today that they want to allow doctors to recommend marijuana, in fact, any medicine, at their discretion, and that they want to call for more studies, though that part I find a bit disturbing. There are dozens of high-caliber studies already in place. But your thoughts in that regard, is this a positive step?
Well, it's a very positive step when the head of the TMA will do that. However, I remember 3 years ago, the head of the American Medical Association, in testimony before the United States Congress, urged Congress to allow testing of marijuana to be done to answer the question once and for all, is it effective as medicine? And, of course, 3 years later, we essentially have no studies on the United States, because the drug companies fear marijuana is a competitive product. They want to keep their profits up. No big surprise there. But hopefully, you know, Texans are waking up. I believe Texans are waking up to the concept that the what goes on in a doctor's office should be no business of Austin and no business of Washington, D.C. I mean, I ask you out there, how many times when you've gotten an opinion from a doctor that for a second opinion you called a politician to ask whether the doctor was right or wrong? Nobody calls a politician for a second opinion, but that's exactly what we're doing with medical marijuana. We're allowing politicians to determine what is or is not medicine that a doctor can recommend, and that is simply wrong. When I have a problem with it, with a doctor, I go to another doctor. I never call a politician, and that's what we need to get back to, is keeping Austin and Washington, D.C., keep their noses out of my doctor's office. Thank you very much.
Now, when I spoke with Jack Cole a while back, he mentioned something in the early days when they were first trying to rev up the drug war, that he and his compadres would go in, find a small bag, throw it in a bigger bag with
dirt
and whatever they could find.
Sure.
And then it makes absolutely no difference when they go to these crime labs, whether it's 100% or it's a tenth of a percent. It's all the same.
That's correct. There's no, as far as I know, there's no standards to say, well, no matter how much other material's in there, whatever the full weight is, that's what's going to count in court. And there's never been any court cases to stop that particular practice by the prosecutors.
All right, Howard, now, you've worked with Mark Stepnoski. You guys helped to found the Texas Normal outfit, and Mark has moved, I suppose, to Vancouver. Is that right?
Right. He has moved to Vancouver, British Columbia.
And I guess we all can surmise one of the reasons, anyway. But Mark was the first professional athlete to kind of step out and speak boldly about
right.
about his use of marijuana. We
right.
had an instance not 6 weeks ago, I don't think, even that long, where this Mr. Williams, the football player, lost his stature and actually quit the NFL. People complained about that, but I figure if the man has the capability and the drive, then marijuana certainly was not a threat to his ability to do his job.
Yeah, the whole issue is so absurd on its face, Dean. If Babe Ruth were held to the same standards as a Mark Stepnoski, it would be a joke. I mean, Babe Ruth was a drunk, but he is also one of the best baseball players in the history of the game. What an athlete does off the playing field should be the business of the athlete. Unfortunately, in this case, because marijuana is illegal, Mark basically has blown any chance he's ever had of being a spokesman or making any money, capitalizing on his fame as an incredibly great football player. But God bless Mark Stepnoski for having the courage, really the only one out there that had the courage to step forth and say, I smoked it, I'm proud of it, and I did it because that was the best drug of choice for me and my aches and pains after a Sunday on the gridiron. And he's also just a heck of a human being who is now putting his energy and his money where his convictions are, and that is to end the prohibition of cannabis and make it a legal, regulated, taxed product.
Yes, indeed. I have to admire having stepped up so high as he did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you run into Joe Blow out there, the people you meet on your ride with Misty or elsewhere, what is their concern? Are they worried about gangs? Is there any real contra opinion? I mean, what are you running into in that regard?
Well, the contra opinion is how is legalizing heroin going to make the world better, safer for my 14-year-old, 15-year-old son or daughter? You know, I was interested. I was in Portland a couple months ago. It was brought in specifically by the president of the Rotary because his two daughters, 15 and 17, once a week, one or the other had been approached by a drug dealer in the high school with free samples of heroin. And he brought me in specifically and said, how would it be better? And I said, because in a legal regulated market, you would eliminate that black market. You would eliminate the blood-sucking drug dealer with their free samples of drugs to our kids. You would eliminate their drug options, their drug jobs that they offer teenagers, which gets them killed. And in that way, that Rotary walked away, and many do, with about half the Rotary. We've done some little surveys. About half the people walking out of the Rotaries and Kiwanis clubs would legalize heroin tomorrow, because they realize that eliminating the drug dealer from our society, that with their violence and death and their job options and free samples, would make it a better, safer world. Because today, Dean, as you know, we have a world of worst of all worlds. We have a world awash in these illegal drugs and plenty of drug dealers with their free samples out there trying to tempt our children. And so we can't get rid of drugs, but we know from prohibition of alcohol, we can get rid of the Al Capones or the Pablo Escobars in 2004.
Now, we touched on this earlier about the conferences you go to, and tell us, what kind of results did you get from those cops? What were their the survey indications?
Well, it's interesting because of the police officers who come up and talk to us, the vast majority, somewhere in the area, about 60%, agree with us to legalize, regulate every drug tomorrow.
Wow.
We're getting about 30% undecided, and about 10% have called us bad names. I mean, without the war on drugs, the DEA will cease to exist. When we make drugs a medical issue, a health matter handled by clinics and doctors, the DEA, all 9,000 employees, will simply fade away unless they can find another job in the federal system. So, of course, they're going to defend the policy and the law because it's their paycheck.
I wanted to give you the opportunity to perhaps talk about your organization, tell folks where they can find out more.
Well, LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, can be found at www.leap.cc, stands for Clear Channel. And we are comprised of police officers, judges, prosecutors, probation officers, anyone who's involved professionally with law enforcement. I urge any of you out there to join. It's free. It's online. Our main mission at this point is to go to the unconverted, to speak to the people at the Rotaries, the Kiwanis, the churches, who kind of believe in the current policy, but we know that their support is a mile wide and an inch deep, and that when we can get in front of these groups, we are able to convince many of them on the spot to change their views on the war on drugs, drug prohibition. And, of course, it costs about $35 per visit to put somebody in there. We're all volunteers. However, we do get paid for gas and that sort of thing. So whatever you can do to support LEAP, it would be much appreciated. For any of you outside the Houston area, I will be headed out next year, next March, about 10th, headed to New York City by way of Denver and Des Moines and Madison, Wisconsin, Detroit. If you're along the route, love to hear from you, see you, and stop by and say hi to Misty and me.
Next week, we're going to do a 9/11 special. We're going to do The War of Terror is the War on Drugs with Afterburners. And I hope to draw very direct and compelling correlations in that regard. Howard, I heard Misty had lost her foal this time. I hope that she remains well and that you guys have a great finish of this transcontinental trip, because it's a very, very strong effort you're doing.
Thank you, Dean. I appreciate the kind words.
You bet. You bet. I want to ask folks to listen in to the 420 Drug War News on the net. We're talking about this Houston Crime Lab, but it's not just the Houston Crime Lab. It's your town, too, most likely. And you should read up on it. You can read more about that if you visit my site, drugtruth.net. Click on the 420 link there, and it'll bring you right in. We're about done here, folks. Once again, I want to remind you that because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag. Please be careful.
For the Drug Truth Network, and on behalf of my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT in Houston. Jab, dance, and...